He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday, that's the weekend wrap show of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and a chartered financial analyst, Barry Kite, who will come in very handy today as we discuss the week in review. It was a busy one. I don't know if there was more drama between Elon Musk and the Twitter board or Johnny Depp and his ex-wife. It was pretty dramatic week. And then you had the Fed weighing in with a pretty hawkish stance. That sent the market reeling on Thursday. And you had rising interest rates. We're seeing levels that we haven't seen in a long, long time. The 30-year mortgage is now over 5%. You have to ask whether or not FANG is done after Netflix lost 35% of its value this past week. That's a lot of billions there that disappeared from the market capitalization of Netflix. We'll update our macro picture on the S&P 500 and on the bond market. This is certainly a different year, 2022, than what we saw in 2020. There's plenty of opportunity, but there's numerous pitfalls to avoid here in 2022. This is not a year for passive investors. This is much more a year for active investors, which we are. We'll just talk a little bit about the difference between between being an active investor and a passive investor. We'll talk a little bit about commodities, inflation. A little bit of a tough week for gold this past week. Bitcoin had a good week, so we got a lot to talk about on today's Best Stocks Now show, Week in Review. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show, Week in Review, with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. 23 years behind the microphone and 23 years as a professional money manager watching the markets. I run several portfolios. I'm a fee-based only manager. I have run a virtual firm. We went virtual a long time ago, way before COVID, because we have radio shows across the country, and we have clients from almost every state in America here at our firm. And I'm joined again today by Barry Kite. Barry, we had a very active week. It was not passive by any stretch of the imagination.
I certainly think, you know, it mixed in some earnings there, and I certainly think the interest rate and bond yield story kind of really took front and center and kind of took a good hold of the market this week.
Yeah, you know, and when it almost got lost in the mix, well, not really, but we are in earnings season. We had 67 companies from the S&P 500 report this past week. I guess the two most notable ones were Netflix and Tesla. One did very well, Tesla, and the other one was a total bomb, Rotten Tomato stinker. And that took a third of the value out of Netflix. Bill Ackman, Pershing Square, sold his Netflix that day, took a $400 million loss, and the market cap on Netflix, woo, really vanished, lost a third of its value this past week. Is FANG dead, and what impact are rising interest rates continuing to have on both the stock market and the bond market? And how can investors position themselves? This is not 2020. This is 2022, and it's a whole different ball game in the market here in 2022. I think we should just start with the big picture here. I kind of like to do that to start off the show. Earnings on the S&P 500 have been going up for the last 13 years, except for the COVID year. That was a one-off year. That was an extraordinary event. And we turned right around in 2021, which we're now counting all the beans for, with this latest earnings season. Well, actually, all the beans are counted. Now we're counting the beans for Q1 2022. But earnings returned to growth last year. In fact, they hit a record of $208, $209, somewhere in there, dollars per share. And if you go back to 2009, coming out of the financial crisis, earnings for the S&P 500 were down around $60 per share. They've gone up every year for the last 13 years, except for the COVID year, and that's what has driven the 13-year now bull market. Rising earnings. The stock market follows earnings. The bond market follows interest rates. The stock market follows earnings. So obviously the big important question to ask ourselves, can this earnings growth continue this year, 2022, and next year, 2023? And if it can, the market can continue to go higher, but there's a lot of what-ifs embedded in the market right now. But suffice it to say that if you look at a chart of the market and you connect the dots from 09 to today, let's talk the S&P 500, we're still in an uptrend. We're still in an uptrend in the Dow. We're still in an uptrend in the NASDAQ. That uptrend has not broke along the way. That's the primary trend, and that is the very definition of a bull market. But we also know that at some point in time, and maybe sooner rather than later, according to a lot of the analysts, there's a recession out there on the horizon. And many people think it will be, it will be sped up by the Fed, which is definitely speeding up on their rate hikes. They've only done one so far. I mean, they've done 0.25%. But if you listen to Jerome Powell, what did he have to say on Thursday, Barry?
Yeah, rhetoric-wise, it's like he's done, I feel like they've done, we're at a percent and a half or two at this point. But, yeah, they, he essentially mentioned a lot of Fed speak this week, and he mentioned yesterday that he's kind of on board with, 50 basis point hikes. They're going to have to kind of front-end this rate hike season, kind of period. And so it kind of seems like he's on board with this speeding up the process, where we were thinking initially, right, we were going quarter point at a time. Now consensus is at least kind of at that 50 basis point the next two meetings. And some folks are now calling for 75 basis points.
I was just going to say that. So, there's, I think, Nomura or one of those.
Yep, Nomura for sure, yep.
They're calling for a 50 basis point hike. Is it this month or early? I think it's this month. Next week, right?
Yeah, 50, and it's the first week of May.
Oh, okay, and then they're calling for a 75 and a 75 after that. Well, we've already seen what these rate hikes have done to two areas of the market that should be avoided at all costs and continue to be avoided at all costs. Number one, that high PE, the long duration, the exploration, discovery, innovation stocks, whatever you want to call them, they're down 70% from their highs set over a year ago. That's the damage that rising interest rates, because it shrinks multiples on stocks. It shrinks PE ratios. And the most vulnerable stocks out there are the stocks with the highest PE ratios. Those are the stocks to avoid. And look what happens when a stock with a high PE ratio announces disappointing earnings. Just look at what happened to Netflix this past week. Absolutely got crushed. But quietly and underneath the surface, a lot of the smaller innovation stocks, whether it be space, whether it be cannabis, whether it be electric vehicles, whether it be lithium battery stocks, they've been crushed. They're down anywhere from 60 to 70%. And that's an area to avoid. Now you go to the next area of high PE stocks. Basically, you're going to find those in the NASDAQ. This has not been a good year for the NASDAQ. It's down 16% since the beginning of the year. Why? Because the NASDAQ is a higher PE index than, for instance, the Russell 2000 small caps, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500. They have lower PE ratios. And if you throw into the mix inflation, and it's been a very good year for a set of stocks that has not done well in a long, long time, the commodity stocks. Look what is going on with the energy stocks, with the steel stocks. We had two big winners in that sector this past week, Nucor and Cleveland Cliffs. It's just a totally different year. You could continue to be invested in what did well in 2020 and continue to get crushed. But there's even an area of the market that is more in harm's way than these high PE stocks, and we'll talk about that when we come back. It, too, should be avoided at all costs. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. It's the Best Stocks Now show, Week in Review. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show, Week in Review, brought to you by Gunderson Capital. This is Bill Gunderson, been a professional money manager for the last 23 years. Seen the best of times and some of the worst of times. I was there in 2000 when the NASDAQ got clobbered by about 80%. I saw the financial crisis. When the S&P got clobbered by 53%, this is a very unique year. I'll tell you the biggest factor that makes this year unique. Number one, probably be the 40-year cycle in interest rates falling has reversed itself. It reversed itself really starting last February, over a year ago. And now we're in a rising interest rate environment, and the fallout is everywhere. Consider the NASDAQ down 16% right now since the beginning of the year. FANG pretty much has fizzled, and the stocks out on the frontier, the long-duration stocks that maybe might have earnings someday, that's one of the worst places you can be invested. And the other big casualty here, our bond funds. We've been warning and warning and warning about bond funds. Now, owning a bond to maturity is different. In fact, Barry, I would say that the market has improved dramatically for buying individual bonds because you're starting to get some attractive yields. But in this environment, you got to plan on holding them to maturity. We try to stay in the 6 to 8 year range, somewhere in there. And you can get about 4.5% now in some of the better companies, not in the AT&Ts of the world, but some of these growth stocks.
Yeah, I think entering bonds, you want, especially buying individual bonds is certainly the way to go versus a bond fund. And when you make the purchase, and when we're making the purchase for the portfolio, it's you kind of want to be willing to hold them to maturity if you have to. Right. Because that's how you avoid some of the, you don't get, from an investor psychology standpoint, you're not affected by that value fluctuation in between because you're getting that principal back at the end of the period. But it doesn't mean you will hold them to maturity. It just means, you want to be prepared to in the event you have to, given this current interest rate environment. But
all right. Now, here's the thing. A bond fund differs a lot from holding those individual bonds to maturity because in a bond fund, you're at the mercy of interest rates. Consider that just a simple ETF that holds 7 to 10-year U.S. Treasuries. The symbol of the ETF is IEF. It's down 10% year-to-date. That's the carnage that has taken place in the bond funds. And many people listening to our show or the podcast that we post every day have a lot of bond funds in their portfolios. It doesn't matter if they're international bonds, municipal bonds, Ginnie Mae bonds, corporate bonds, investment grade bonds. All the bond funds are getting clobbered. In fact, 100%, other than the inverse bond funds, which we own a couple of inverse bond funds that go up when the bond market goes down. But a lot of people have a big position in their portfolio, a heavy weighting, especially older folks, in bond funds, which are going to remain on the railroad tracks as that freight train called the Fed comes around the corner and it's picking up steam. I mean, you've got the bond market down 10% already, and there's only been one rate hike, okay, a quarter of a percent. Now, I'm not saying that there's a direct correlation between the rate hikes, because a lot of this has been built into the bond market in anticipation of what's coming. But I think there's going to be further carnage in the bond market, in interest rate sensitive types of vehicles. The junk bond market, I think, is very, very vulnerable. And a lot of these passive accounts or asset allocation accounts, which we do not like, that strategy, are heavily weighted in bond funds. And here we are finally in a rising interest rate environment. That puts their area of the investment market in peril. The other area of the market that has really gotten crushed and is going to continue to get crushed because of various reasons, inflation, the conflict in Ukraine and Russia, the emerging markets and the international markets are another bad place to be invested. Europe is a bad place to be invested. China's market's down 20% year to date. Europe's down 10%. And the emerging markets overall, as measured by the Vanguard VWO fund, down 11.2%. I don't think it's going to get any better for the global markets. I think between the war, between the supply chain issues, you've got COVID coming back in China. That's another area to avoid. Now, okay, we've listed all these areas to avoid in 2021, the year we're in. Where are the opportunities? Well, consider that the NASDAQ's down 16%. The Dow's only down 4%. Okay, the reason being value stocks. This is a year for value stocks and lower PE. The Dow, by nature, has lower PE stocks in them. If you eliminate the tech stocks out of the Dow this year, Barry, take out some of the big tech, the Dow might even be positive on the year. So value over growth. And this really, if you have a 401k at work, usually you get choices of mutual funds. There will be value funds, there will be growth funds. We definitely this year, for the first year in a long, long time, we favor value funds. Lower PE because of the rising interest rate environment. And because we're in an inflationary environment for the first time, the worst inflation since 1982, which was back when the Fed had to raise interest rates up to Paul Volcker to 20%. To bring on a recession and to kill that inflation, which was eating us alive. Well, it's back. And that is really favoring, agricultural stocks. We saw, Archer Daniels Midland. We've seen, other, like Deere. The fertilizer stocks have done really well. We've done really well in this area. Grain, seeds, etc. And, of course, the basics of life. Dow, we saw Dow Chemical, oil and gas, energy, one of the leading sectors, if not the leading sector here, because of many reasons. The war on fossil fuels, inflation, supply constraints, the Russian-Ukraine conflict. It's really put upwards pressure on not only oil but natural gas, which has probably been the biggest winner in the market this year. And, of course, gold has done well off and on for the first time in a long time. So we've gone from a market that favored back in 2020 all of these sexy transformational types of stocks to a market this year that favors the basics of life that do well in a rising interest rate inflationary environment. And that's where you got to be focused. We'll get a little bit more specific when we come back. This is the Best Stocks Now show with Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show, week in review, where we've got so far this year, the S&P is down about 7%, the NASDAQ's down about 16%. This is definitely a market in a rising interest rate environment that favors lower PE stocks for the first time in a long time, in many years. Those would be value stocks. And if we look at the leading sectors in the market, Barry, what a difference a couple of years makes. You know, you don't have the Bitcoin miners and the electric vehicles and the battery charging stocks and the lithium stocks. Instead, your leading sectors here in 2022, they're not very exciting, but they're doing very, very well this year. And those that have, you know, invested in these areas of the market are doing a whole lot better than those that are sticking with what they did a couple of years ago. Listen to the leading sectors. I track 67 different sectors in the market with my BestStocksNowApp.com. And right now, the leaders, a lot of mining stocks, a lot of mining sectors. I use ETFs to track these sectors. The number one sector in the market right now out of 67 sectors, metals/mining sector. Number two, gold miners. Number three, the wheat ETF, W-E-A-T. Well, when you think about it, wheat, Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe and all that wheat. I don't think it's coming online this year, and that's going to create a real pinch, a real squeeze in wheat. The grains index is the number four leading sector. Then you have one tech sector in the top ten, and it also makes sense if you consider the conditions in the world right now. Global Cybersecurity Index. The symbol is BUG. That's an ETF. Then the next one is Moo, M-O-O. Old MacDonald had a farm. Agribusiness sector, number six. Number seven, the U.S. oil exploration. Number eight, silver. Number nine, hard asset sector. And number 10, the U.S. energy sector. Why is it, do you think that it's these hard assets, tangible commodities that are leading the market here in 2021, Barry?
Well, number one, pre-Russian invasion, right? They're the kind of primary inputs that drive inflation, right? Whether it's lumber, whether it's energy, food, those are the costs that we see the most, especially when you look at the pump, heating our home. They're necessities, right? In terms of the old hierarchy of needs, right? Those are the things we need first. Those sectors, of course, had also been, from a stock standpoint, had been kind of, underloved, right? And their PE ratios were very low. Which happens to be a good place to be in a rising interest rate environment. And then, throw on top of all of that, throw on top the, supply constraints, and then the newest supply constraint being the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the underlying sanctions, after which the invasion occurred. So all of that's to say, it kind of those dirty stuff, what we refer to as the dirty stocks, they may not have the best ESG scores out there, but they've got your best momentum grades and your best PE ratios out there.
Yeah, you know, I would say, just to put it into simple terms, I think people are going to give up their Netflix subscription before they stop buying bread at the supermarket. That's kind of the world we live in, because inflation is, you know, there's less money for discretionary types of things out there when you're putting so many dollars into your fuel tank or to heat your home and natural gas and whatnot. You're going to give up. You're going to start to look at things that, you know, do I really need? Am I really watching Netflix? Well, look at how many people canceled their subscriptions. And then you could also say, you know, we had a huge run in the electric vehicle stocks in 2020, because you had a bunch of them coming online to try to challenge Tesla, who they have a huge leadership position, obviously. But many of those stocks that came online in 2020, they have no products yet. The Rivians of the world, the Polestars, and others. And, you know, the problem is, yes, gas is expensive. And you're saying, maybe I ought to look at an electric car. Those electric cars are expensive. They're not cheap. They're very expensive. Mercedes is coming out with an all-electric SUV. It will be built in Alabama, okay, Mercedes-Benz, the pride of Germany, being built in Alabama. But the problem is that SUV is going to be over $100,000. So, yes, transitioning away from fossil fuels is a goal of the world, but it's going to take a long time. It's not going to happen overnight, and that's going to put upwards pressure on a lot of these fossil fuel stocks and continue to put upwards pressure on them. So, it's a hard asset, commodity-driven market, and there's many ways for individual investors. Now, me, as a professional money manager, I manage different portfolios. I manage a large-cap growth portfolio. I manage a dividend and growth portfolio. I manage an ultra-growth portfolio. I manage an emerging growth portfolio. And we're heavily weighted in all of our equity funds. We own about 25 stocks in each of those different funds that I manage. We're heavily weighted toward hard assets. And on the vulnerable areas of the market, okay, here's a subject that most people don't know about. I don't hear it talked about hardly at all. I watch the financial channels all day long. I turn the sound down, but I have them on just so I know how things are going. I learned about inverse funds a long time ago, you know, back in the early 2000s. They come in handy. So, for instance, you take the most vulnerable area of the market, which is those high PE out there on the frontier, and I use Cathie Wood's ARK funds as a proxy. ARKK is down about 70% from its high. There's an inverse ARK ETF called SARK, S-A-R-K. We own that in our ultra growth portfolios and our emerging growth portfolios as a hedge. It's gone way up. If ARK goes down 30% more from here, it'll go up 30%. It has an inverse relationship. And we also still own some inverse funds on the NASDAQ, which remains vulnerable. What that is, PSQ, is opposite of QQQ. You see all these commercials every day for QQQ, buy QQQ. And now they've got some spinoffs of that, like QQQJ and QQ. Well, what about PSQ? Okay, if the NASDAQ's down 16% this year, PSQ is up 16%. And I think the NASDAQ remains vulnerable. You look at all of these big NASDAQ leaders from the past, like, you know, the semiconductors, the chips. They just look terrible. The charts look terrible. Shopify, Amazon, AMD, NVIDIA. They're high PE stocks that do not do well in a rising interest rate environment. And that's going to continue. So we've picked on some of those vulnerable areas of the market and own some inverse ETFs on them. Another one I would mention is the inverse bond, TBT. So I mentioned the ETF that owns 7 to 10 year U.S. Treasuries. Well, there's an opposite of that, TBT. It's hitting new highs while the bond funds are hitting new lows. I also manage a bond fund. We have about 25% position now, maybe even a little more than that, in inverse bond ETFs to protect and to hedge the individual bonds that we own. So those inverse funds, they've come in real handy at times when we get into snotty markets like we have right now. Well, we run a virtual firm. That makes it easy. You don't have to drive downtown and go up a 20-story elevator with a bunch of people that are coughing and hacking and fight for a parking spot and all the one-way streets downtown. We have a virtual office. You can call us at 855-611-BEST. Edie will set you up with us for an interview. We'll figure out where you're invested now, where your weak spots are, where you can improve. 855-611-BEST. We'll be right back with the final segment of the show. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show, Week in Review. It was a busy week. There's definitely been more days of the market going south in 2022 than the market going north. But there's also areas of the market that have done much, much better and are in positive territory, actually, for the year. And there's just a lot of pitfalls to avoid here in 2022 in this very unique environment that we have not seen for quite some time, that being rising interest rates and inflation, and, of course, global conflict, which is also impacting the market. Now, let's just take a look here at the target prices out there on the S&P 500. The average target price right now on the S&P 500, this is by the Morgan Stanleys, the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, the big wirehouse firms, they have a consensus target price for the S&P 500 over the next 12 months of 5,300. Well, we're at 4,300 right now. I think that the target price, the consensus target price, is too high. Yes, we are expected to have record earnings, believe it or not, despite all the bad news you hear on the market and the indexes every day. We're expected to have record earnings for the S&P 500 this year and record earnings again next year. So we're not really seeing much impact yet to earnings, okay? It's helping some. Inflation is helping some companies. It's hurting some companies. Kind of balances off right now. Where we're seeing the contraction is in the multiple on those earnings. Let's just say earnings $200. The average P.E. ratio over the years for the S&P has been somewhere in the 16 to 18 range. So if earnings were going to be $200, you'd have about a $3,400 target price. Well, the market got all the way up to 23 times earnings. Early last year, we got up to 23 times earnings. That's way outside the norm of 16 to 18. Why did it go that high? Because of the low interest rate environment. But then what happened? Interest rates started to trickle higher. And now we've got the Fed on the march to raise interest rates, so that multiple's got to continue to shrink, okay? And that's what's happening. That's why you're seeing shrinkage in the market. And you've had two big firms lower their target price. Goldman Sachs lowered their target price to $4,700. And J.P. Morgan lowered their target price to $4,900. Well, that's still higher than where we are today. I update my target price in the for the S&P 500 every single week in the newsletter that I put out. This newsletter is my internal research that I do as a money manager every single Friday and Saturday, so that I've gone down every little nook and cranny of the market to make sure I'm in the right places, to make sure I'm not missing anything. But the best indicator of all for me, earnings for the S&P 500. That has led me to be a bull for the most part for the last 12, 13 years. And I hear people say all the time, well, the market, the Fed, if it weren't for the Fed, market, we wouldn't have had this bull. It comes down to earnings. And I publish a graph every week in my newsletter that shows earnings year by year. And even more important than that, expected earnings. The market trades on expected earnings. Barry, if I'm not mistaken, Netflix actually beat their earnings estimate. It was their expected earnings going forward that they lowered.
Yeah, with the go-forward guidance, they lost subscribers. So
exactly.
Do the math, right, on a go-forward basis, right? They might have hit earnings this time, but if they have less subscribers or less subscriber growth going forward, right, well, then they're going to, obviously, you need to readjust what you think their earnings are going to be going forward. And so when you do that, right, you're naturally going to have that pullback.
The market is always looking ahead 1 to 2 years, not only on individual stocks, but on the overall market itself. And so when those expectations, which I track every single week, start to fall, we're in trouble. We will have another recession. We will have another bear market. It could be a bad one. For that reason, I've learned that there's times when you don't want to be exposed to the market. There's times if a recession is out there, if earnings are starting to be ratcheted downwards, those expectations, that's a major warning sign for all stocks, pretty much across the board. Now, we have not had that occur for the last 13 years.
And Netflix is a great example. Look at all the big wirehouses' price targets, right? Look at their price targets over the last year or two for Netflix, and it's just, slash,
yeah,
slash, right?
Been slashing it.
It's crazy, yeah.
And eventually that's going to happen to the S&P 500, but that's not happening yet. So the bottom line is, as we close the show, this is a very unique year. It's a very bad time to be a passive investor in an asset allocation because you more than likely have a ton of bond funds. They've been crushed so far this year. Look at the charts of them. They're horrible. They're going to continue to get crushed in a rising interest rate environment, and we have to keep our ear to the ground on the stock market. And the earnings for the S&P 500, we're now in earnings season, and every week we're getting more of a clear picture of the future earnings forecast for that S&P 500. We remain bullish on stocks, very bearish on the bond funds, but in the market you have to be really, really selective, and you have to be in the right sectors, and you have to be out of those high PE sectors, which continue to get clobbered. If you would like to take a look at more of an active, we're not day trading, we're playing the big swings and the big trends that change from time to time in the market. When these big trends change, when the market zigs, you got to zig with it or you're going to get clobbered. So anyways, if you'd like to talk to us, 855-611-BEST, or if you'd like to just see the newsletter and how our portfolios are doing, what we're invested in, what we've been buying, what we've been selling, you can get 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, great weekend, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.